Main menu.
Main menu.
Main menu.
Main menu.
Hello and a warm welcome to ACB Radio's Main Menu. Main Menu is produced by and for ACB Radio Mainstream and is made available to radio reading information services around the world. This week on Main Menu, we focus on screen access, in particular the release of GW Micro's WindowEyes 4.5. We start by hearing an interview which first went out earlier this year, when Jonathan Mosen spoke with Doug Jeffrey of GW Micro about the feature set in 4.5. Carlos Taylor then picks up the story by demonstrating some of the new features in a little more detail. Also on the programme, Paul Merrill shares with us some of the thoughts he has about screen magnification products, and we conclude with a demonstration of a hard disk MP3 player by Michael Lang. That's all to come this week on Main Menu. Earlier this year, Main Menu spoke to Doug Jeffrey of GW Micro about the launch of WindowEyes 4.5. Jonathan Mosen opened the interview by asking Doug about the response to WindowEyes 4.5 at the CSUN exhibition.
There was a lot of excitement about it. It's always kind of fun to go to a show with some new stuff and new things like that. So it brought a lot of crowd to our booth. I think the show attendance itself was down a little bit, but in the booth or in the exhibit area, it seemed like there was a lot of flurry going around, and some of the new things we were showing especially brought a lot of people to our booth.
I'm interested that you say attendance is down. Do people feel that technology has reached a bit of a plateau and that there's just not as much innovation as there used to be, do you think?
I'm not sure if it's that or if it was just the start of the mess in Iraq and all of that. I'm not sure what actually brought the attendance down. I don't know. CSUN itself has seemed like it's been going up every year for us, so I don't see that as going down for that reason. Personally.
Well, WindowEyes users who have been with the product for a long while, I think, will be delighted with version 4.5, won't they? Because it really signifies a major unfreezing of the feature set with all of the work behind you now on porting WindowEyes to the 2000 and XP operating systems.
That's right. There was a lot of groundwork we had to do and a lot of just stability things. And we've always had the philosophy of making sure that we have a very strong, stable base, which has kind of hurt us in the feature set. But at least in the short term, it's hurt us in the feature set. But I think now that we've got that strong base, we've got all the OSs working, that we can now start putting in some of these features that people have been asking for and things that we wanted to be able to do for a long time. We can now do it with confidence, knowing that things aren't going to crumble from underneath us.
So can we go through some of those new features that you were showing off at CSUN? And I suppose one thing that is truly unique in the industry is the Citrix support.
Well, that's certainly the biggest thing that we've added that generated the most interest at the show, where people were coming over just to see that and just in amazement of how it worked. There were some presentations talking about the inaccessibility of Citrix and terminal services in general, and that at least that's the way that they were going to word all of their presentations, and obviously after they saw what we had, they kind of had to do a double take on that and change a little bit of what they were about to say, because it can be made accessible. So we have been working very, very closely with Citrix. They've been extremely friendly and eager to get this all working, as are we. And so we've worked with them behind the scenes for a little while and did some things on their end, our end, or whatever, and we were able to show a very impressive demo at CSUN where we had a laptop sitting over there with a Windows 2000 server on it, and we had a couple other machines that were connected to it through a LAN, and we could actually log into a session running WindowEyes on that session, and it was fully accessible as if you were actually sitting at that terminal. So it was kind of boring to demonstrate because how do you show that? It just works. It's just like you were sitting at your desktop. But when you think about what's going on, it was very, very impressive.
So could you explain in greater depth then for people who aren't familiar with Citrix at all what it is and why this is such a breakthrough?
Sure. Citrix is one form of allowing you to have a server system sitting someplace that has all the applications that you would ever want to use or all of your employees or whoever that may be that may want to use. So you install Office, you install whatever applications you want on that server, on one machine. And then through the miracle of terminal services and Citrix MetaFrame, that server can then be connected to by several client systems who can connect into it, log in what they call kind of a virtual machine or a thin client environment. It's got several names, which basically is kind of a dumb terminal, effectively. Everything is being run on the server side. So all the CPU horsepower, all the applications, everything is being done on the server side. So the advantage of that, obviously, is the system administrator just has to worry about this one server machine or however many servers they may have, but they just have to maintain that one system versus having to install everything on all client machines and things like that and get them all working and whatever. It can all be handled on one side. So it's very attractive from an administrative standpoint, which is why this technology is taking off. The problem is, that in the past anyway, is once you start up that session from your client, your assistive technology products just die, whether it's screen enlargement, whether it was a screen reader, it would just go silent, and you would hear absolutely nothing while you're on that session. Visibly, of course, everything's working, and it looks like a whole new desktop in that little window. But from accessibility standpoint, it was quiet. And so that's the problem, and that's how we actually worked with Citrix to get WindowEyes itself to be run on the server side so that it runs just like any other application, and the information is then ported over to the client side.
Obviously, with screen readers, responsiveness is really critical, and WindowEyes is an extremely responsive screen reader. Are there issues in getting responsiveness really nice and snappy with this kind of thing?
Well, there's lots of ways of looking at all of this, how it connects and how that would affect interruptibility and just responsiveness in general and that type of thing. At CSUN, what we were doing is we were using an external synthesizer, the DeckTalk Express, hooked up through a serial port. So on the server side, the WindowEyes was configured to connect to a DeckTalk Express, but it was configured to port its output to the client side. And in that case, you couldn't really tell the difference. We're running on a local LAN, 100 megabit, you know, LAN system there. You couldn't really tell that you were running through a Citrix session. It was that responsive. Now, if you take that same thing and you go off into running it over the Internet, we've done that here a couple times from California to Indiana or whatever and just kind of playing with that. Of course, it depends on the throughput of the Internet at the time and all of that business, but it was acceptable. Then, of course, the next down step would be dial-up, and that we're not exactly sure how that's going to work yet. We've not done a lot of testing with dial-up, but we feel that WindowEyes itself, if you're using a serial connection, would have very little overhead on the throughput of a dial-up connection, because really all you're looking at, in addition to what MetaFrame or Terminal Services would have done, is you've just got that extra piping of the speech going across. And again, when you think about it, your synthesizer's running at 9600 baud. Your modem is much faster than 9600 baud, hopefully. So it really won't bring down the throughput that much. So that's one phase of it. The next phase would be if you're using the sound card, which I'm envisioning most people wanting to be able to use a sound card so they don't have to carry around an external synthesizer with them. So I could walk over to any sighted computer system and just use it without, again, plugging any hardware in. So the sound card porting is the next step that we'd like to look at, and it's fairly good. The problem is there's some interruptibility problems. Of course, Citrix never envisioned using the sound card the way we're using it, and so some of the porting of the sound isn't flushed when it should be, so you have to listen to a couple seconds of more speech and things like that. So those are some of the issues that we're dealing with right now and trying to resolve so we can get that interruptibility up where it should work. So if you're taking a sound card and you're running on it or dial-up, that might have a huge impact because when you port the sound, you have the ability of setting different encryption levels. Obviously, the more encryption you use, the worse the quality. So if you want good quality speech on a dial-up, you may suffer on performance. And again, we've not done a lot of testing with that. So another option that we're looking at and we hope to make available very soon, if not when we release it, is the idea of connecting to the server session, but having the server-side WindowEyes, instead of actually generating all the synthesis itself, the speech itself, whether it's through a sound card or an external synthesizer or whatever, actually have a virtual synthesizer driver that you configure it for. And that virtual driver would go to the client side and say, is WindowEyes running over here? If it is, I'm going to use whatever you got. So I'm just going to port the speech itself, the text, really, whatever it is, which is going to be very minimal when you think of the whole picture of what's really going on. It's going to be a very small subset of the throughput. So it's going to send that over to the local copy of WindowEyes, and if that local copy is configured to run through the sound card, then it would use the local system's sound card and processor to generate all of that. So in that respect, we feel that it will be instantaneous again, and that will give you the full flexibility of being able to use whatever your current copy of, you know, your client copy of WindowEyes. Because again, if a blind person's running a system, they're probably going to want WindowEyes running on the local system, and then when they log into a session, they're required to run WindowEyes on that session as well. So we can kind of communicate between those two copies of WindowEyes, which should allow dial-up systems to, again, have very minimal impact on the throughput going back and forth.
And is that talking to the client copy of WindowEyes something that you're hoping for 4.5, or is it a future enhancement?
I am hoping for 4.5, even if it doesn't make 4.5, which I hope it does, but who knows at this point. It's something that we could make available at any point because it does not require an upgraded WindowEyes. It just requires a new synthesizer driver to be made available. So you would get this driver, install it, and it would just work. So that I cannot promise for 4.5, but I certainly can say that the serial port option is what we're putting our most emphasis on now. We want to make sure that that works because that at least is an acceptable option at the moment. Then we want to look at the sound card stuff, and during all of this process in the background, we're going to be working on this virtual driver as well.
All right, that's impressive. And a major revamp of the way that WindowEyes interacts with the Internet has been demonstrated for 4.5.
Absolutely. That's another one of the big things, new feature sets that we've been adding to WindowEyes. So there's tremendous change as far as browsing the web. What we did was, you know, WindowEyes came out with this kind of this virtual cursor thing, what we call MSAA mode, very early on, and others have kind of jumped on board to that and things. But the others, to be honest, have kind of jumped over what we've done. They've done some pretty impressive things. So we said, okay, we started this. We want to make sure we're at the top of this again. So we stepped back and we looked at our competition. We looked at Homepage Reader, and we said, okay, what are they doing, and what can we make it do better? And not just mimic what they're doing, but take it a step above, you know, raise that bar. And so we did a lot of research. We went out, looked at all of that stuff, and we set up our specifications of what we wanted to do, and we feel that we've accomplished that. So, I mean, things like access keys and acronyms, abbreviations, forms, headings, languages, lists are now handled accurately. tables have been greatly enhanced. Long descriptions, objects, paragraphs, quotes, block quotes, just on and on and on. Anything that we possibly can get our hands on, we're now exposing to the user. And we've changed that user interface a little bit to be more friendly. We've been criticized by some of our users that some of the keystrokes that we've had in MSAA mode, you know, required five hands and a couple toes to be able to hit them. So what we've done is we've given the ability of the user to set those keys now. So in the same way you can set any of the other hotkeys, you now can set any of the MSAA keys, like going to the next link or the next table or the next list or whatever, can now be defined to the user. But we've defaulted all of those keys to standard letter keys, T for table, L for list, that type of thing. So it's much easier and quicker to be able to navigate around through all of those elements and things. So again, the list goes on and on and on as far as what we've done within IE to be able to expose all of this information in the best possible format that we can.
So
all of the verbosity options that we had before, it was very, I don't know, maybe before in 4.21 there was, maybe 8 options within the verbosity menu. Now there are many options. Each element itself, like lists and tables and objects and flash and all of that, have their own available of verbosity options now that you can individually set for all of those. So the verbosity dialog has been greatly enhanced with all these new options that you can now set and tweak the way that you want it to be on your system.
What's also quite impressive is the way in which WindowEyes 4.5 will allow you to omit certain items from a read to end. So if you're in a hurry to get an overview of a page, you can configure read to end to miss things that aren't important to you.
That's right. Not only is it nice within WindowEyes that you can turn on and off a particular feature of, okay, I don't care about paragraphs, where they start, where they end, or lists, where they start and where they end, but you can also, as you said, you can hear that as you're up and down arrowing through your particular web page, but maybe while I'm doing a read to end, which means I've just told WindowEyes to read me from this point all the way down to the document, I don't want to hear all of those items because it just kind of breaks my chain of thought. I just want to hear the content. So I can individually set the read-to-end option for all of these elements. So on or off while read-to-end or on or off while I'm up and down arrowing through the document, which gives you total flexibility, I think.
I suppose you've got blind people who really like all of this control and being able to hear what they're hitting in different types of elements and manipulating them. And then you've got others who are saying, gosh, you know, this browsing the web is getting more and more complicated and more verbose. I suppose the trick is to make all these configuration options intuitive so that people can silence the stuff that they don't want.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it does. With flexibility comes complexity at times, and that can be daunting to a new user, especially of being able to handle all of these things. So what we've done is obviously we've set the defaults to all these options the way that we think most people would want to use that. But we've also got what we call smart mode for a lot of these things, that we enable that smart mode. So if you have tables enabled, unfortunately tables are used a lot for formatting data as well, and they're really false tables. You don't want to know that that's a table because it's not really a table, it's more for formatting. Or the same with the paragraph. Maybe there's a paragraph there, but if there's no text in it, do we really want to consider that a paragraph? And the same with lists and things like that. So we have these smart modes that will weed out all of this stuff that we don't really consider, even though technically they may be these components. Realistically, you don't want to have them represented that way because it's meaningless or used for other purposes. So we try to deal with that to circumvent the beginning user from being overwhelmed with all this information and things like that.
All right. And now you also have some changes in the way that the dialogues for hotkeys are laid out.
Well, WindowEyes has always given you the ability of being able to manually change the hotkeys for recurrent line or whatever. You could go to a menu option, open up a dialog box. You'd have a list box of all the items, and you could arrow to whatever you want, hit a key, and define it to that keystroke on the keyboard. Well, the problem is that our options have gotten more and more over the time, so our list box has been growing and growing and growing, and it's almost was unmanageable now to have all of those options in one big list. So, and especially now that we've added all the MSAA keys, there's, I don't know, maybe 40 or some of those keys in themselves. And so adding that on top of the 170 some we already had, it just became ridiculous. So we decided to break up those options. So now in our hotkey dialog, instead of opening up a dialog, it opens up a pull-down menu that you can then select cursoring key options, mouse options, miscellaneous options, or MSAA options. And then when you open it up, it's obviously keys relating to that group. So it makes it very, very nice to be able to quickly get without seeing all the other garbage in the way.
Now, word is that you are shipping DeckTalk XS 32 with subsequent versions of WindowEyes.
That's right. Eloquence is nice for a lot of things, but there are some issues with Eloquence, and so we're always looking around for options of other synthesizers that we can use with WindowEyes. Of course, it supports anything we can get our hands on, but as far as what we ship with it now, we decided to work very closely with Phonix, who is now the latest owner of DeckTalk, both the hardware and software products. But they're mainly, of course, only working on their software products now. And we worked up a great deal with them to allow us to include DeckTalk Access 32 with every copy of WindowEyes now. So when you install WindowEyes, we're not sure if we're going to default to Eloquence or Deck, how that's going to be, but they'll both be there that you can certainly install either one, Eloquence or Deck, and be able to use that. Now, this copy of DeckTalk will be locked to WindowEyes. It will only be usable by WindowEyes. So we'll still have our full version available that we've been selling. But if anybody's been watching our list, you'll know that that price has dropped down from $200 down to $75 for the full version, which can be used by any product that supports DeckTalk Access 32.
Okay, so that means that there's no additional copy protection as a result of DeckTalk then because it's locked to WindowEyes.
Exactly. So you don't have that headache anymore. It's just going to be there. It's just going to work, and that's the beauty of it. So there is no copy protection other than it only works with WindowEyes, and that in itself, as you said, is the copy protection, I guess.
Okay. What about those of us who own DeckTalk Access 32, you know, in our own rights, will WindowEyes be smart enough not to overwrite that version of DeckTalk?
Absolutely. We want to make sure that this is all seamless to the user. So even if you select to install the version that only works with WindowEyes, it will not overwrite your full version at all. So you won't even know anything what's going on. It won't interrupt at all your existing copy, and they'll just be totally separate. So, yeah.
So what version of DeckTalk will be shipping?
Well, we're not 100% sure yet, but it's probably going to be in the we've been working with DeckTalk because they've had some issues with some of the other some problems that they've had over the years, and we've talked to them. They're very anxious now to resolve some of these issues, and they have for us. And so I'm not sure what they're going to be calling that version. Last I heard, it's probably going to be called 4.62, which is basically the 4.61 with all of our fixes that we asked them to resolve. They also are working on some newer technology things that, that hopefully we can pass on as that becomes available. But for right now, it probably will be the 4.62.
Okay, because DeckTalk ain't what it used to be. Some of the newer iterations of the software sound quite strange.
Well, that's some of the things that we asked them to fix. When they came out with the 4.61, I don't know that too many people were actually using that or were that actually... I just don't know how many people were actually playing with it, who beta tested it or whatever, but there were some very big differences in the voice quality. The pitch seemed strange. It was just all around not good. And so, but it had some other fixes in there that were good that we've asked for. And so we wanted the best of both. And that's where 4.6, the 4.62 will come into play. So it will have the same old sound that you're used to, but have some of that static noise that some people were hearing on some sound cards or whatever, that's gone away. And some of the sappy problems that they were having in the past have gone away and things like that.
There are also issues of excessive use of abbreviations, i.e. Sunday Microsystems, Windows 98 Southeast. Are they going to be looked at?
That's definitely on the list of things that we're working with them on. DeckTalk in the past had the ability of disabling all the abbreviations and acronym type features. Unfortunately, it had the side effect of causing major other problems, which is why WindowWise didn't issue the command to tell it to stop doing that. We are working with them to resolve that, so again, we can get the best of both. We can shut it up without getting the side effects. So hopefully that will be in there, yes.
And is there anything else that I've missed that is new in 4.5?
There's lots of other little things that we're adding in it. One of the other features that we're putting in is error reporting, I'm sure some of your listeners are used to this, where if Microsoft causes some sort of problem or you get a GPF, and next time you boot up the operating system, Dialog will come up and ask you, do you want to send this error information to Microsoft? Well, we've done the same thing. If the error was generated by WindowWise, then WindowWise, when it starts up the next time, will tell you that an error was generated. Do you want to send this information to GW Micro? And we've got lots of technical information. There's no private information, no credit card numbers. It's just information relating to the crash itself that will allow us to analyze that information to be able to make WindowWise as stable as possible. One of the issues with Citrix was security. If having a screen reader running on a Citrix or a terminal service environment could generate some security issues. So obviously stability is a big thing for security. So we put stability as our number one priority anytime we see those problems. And so with this error reporting, not only will it help us be able to find problems that exist maybe rarely out there and certain people can generate these types of errors, but it can also give the user information because maybe that problem has been resolved. So we hope at some point to be able to not only receive the information but return back a status of this information saying, okay, this is fixed in version blah or whatever, and be able to help them with that. But this error reporting has helped us tremendously even in our private beta phase that we're using that has allowed us to resolve a lot of these problems that are very intermittent and difficult to diagnose. So we feel that will, again, just help us with stability and then bringing in that security as well.
So does that collect, for example, whose serial number it is so you can determine whose system's having the problem or not?
No, we're not sending anything that would ever allow us to know who actually sent that information. So it's just strictly the stack, all the low-level programming type information that would not tell us anything other than just how the path that WindowWise took before it blew up. But there's no information about what was on your screen at the time. There's no information about WindowWise serial numbers, usernames, none of that gets sent through. We are contemplating about allowing the user to send us that information on the error dialog that comes up, maybe putting in an edit box and allowing the user to type in some information, like maybe I was on my way into Eudora when this happened or whatever, and be able to give us some private information if they choose and send that across to us so that we can get back with them if we need to. Because right now, unfortunately, we have no way of notifying that user if we have resolved the problem. But again, that's because of confidentiality and things like that. We don't want to have the information. We don't want to have the user send the information to give us the information to get back with them. So.
Very good.
We'll see how that works.
And when are you hoping to release a public beta of 4.5?
The public beta, we're we were hoping for mid-April. That's probably going to slip just a little bit, so we're probably looking at early May sometime. We want to get that out there as soon as possible, but we want to make sure that it's got everything that we originally spec'd for 4.5 in there, so that it can be well-tested, and then we typically run a month or so, maybe put out a second public beta, I'm not sure, and then hopefully go out in early June maybe sometime.
Is it too early to talk about pricing at this stage for the 4.5 release?
No, we are looking at a $100 charge for this. And again, what we've talked about, there are more things than even what we've talked about. People can come to our website or send us more information if they want to know everything that's in that. But it will be a $100 upgrade if you're running the current version of WindowEyes. If you're not current, then you would need to pay whatever the upgrades are to get current, as well as the $100. And then, of course, if you have an SMA, it would just be an SMA hit on that as well.
Okay. I don't certainly want to cut you short. Feel free to let us know what else is new in there. This is great stuff.
Well, I could go on and on and on. Well, some of the other big things that we've been working with, we've been obviously working a lot with Microsoft and some of the new operating systems coming out. Windows 2003 Server, which has RTM, I believe, which means we'll start seeing it on the shelf here pretty quick. That is the basically the XP Server version of, like, you had Windows 2000, you had Windows 2000 Server. Well, 2003 Server is basically the XP Server version. And that had some issues. The Microsoft, of course, has been very paranoid about security, and unfortunately, in the name of security, they broke a lot of accessibility things. And so we were on them, and Microsoft was testing with WindowEyes. We were testing with WindowEyes. We found some issues that they broke in the name of security, so we came up with compromises that allowed security to hold but also make accessibility in there. So we've been working very tightly with that. So 4.5 will support 2003 Server. The current version of WindowEyes will not, but the 4.5 will support that. Office 11 for Microsoft, which is the next version of Office, post Office XP. That we've been working very closely with them. We want to make sure that we don't have any regressions or any problems with Office, so we're going to make sure that that works well with 4.5. VisualStudio.net has become extremely popular. There's a lot of people that want to program, and VisualStudio.net is Microsoft's latest environment. In the past, we've not worked so well with the Visual Studio environments. We've made sure now that we do work with it. We've got a good relationships with the programming team at Microsoft that's working with VisualStudio.net. In fact, at CSUN, Microsoft was giving a presentation that I was involved in. Basically, the presentation was regarding how Microsoft works with their assistive technology vendors. And I was one of the people that talked about how that relationship worked and what they've done to help WindowEyes. Well, during that same presentation, the product manager, Jonathan Gordon, of VisualStudio.net from Microsoft, gave a demonstration of using VisualStudio.net with WindowEyes. And the impressive thing is, he's the program manager, so he's fairly high up the chain there. He had the monitor off, or he wasn't looking at the monitor, and he was using strictly speech to give his demonstration. And so that's kind of the first time that I've actually seen a Microsoft employee who wasn't already blind give a demonstration without grabbing the mouse and say, look, see how accessible it is. And so he was strictly using the keyboard, no visual on the monitor at all. And so that was kind of impressive. I think they're finally starting to get it there.
That is exciting. There are a couple of things. Obviously, Office 11, that's around the corner, and that's all very exciting with its XML-based approach, and WindowEyes is committed to supporting that. People have been saying for some time that they would like to see a beefing up of WindowEyes support for Office in general. Is that in the works?
Unfortunately, we've done a couple things in Office, in 4.5, but the big things are going to be post 4.5. Again, it was a tough choice. We felt that a lot of applications are going web-based. Again, PeopleSoft was something we talked about at CSUN, where they have a lot of web-based applications and things such as that. So we felt that we had to beef up our Internet browser environment. We had to get that up to spec. We had to make it W3C compliant and well above all of that. So there are workarounds with Office. Yes, it needs to be improved, and yes, we can do lots of things to improve that. But we felt that because that it's not totally inaccessible. For instance, Citrix is totally inaccessible. Office is usable. So, you know, which one has higher priority? So we went with the one that was totally inaccessible. And the same with some of the web-based applications that are coming out needed some of this enhancement that's there. So we realize, we hear our users, we know that Office needs to be improved, and that will be something very high on the priority list post 4.5.
The other thing I want to keep track of with you is the idea of some sort of macro language or automation facility or something that gives a customizability well beyond what currently exists. Are you still looking at that?
And we're looking at everything right now. I mean, we've got some very nice things planned for our post 4.5 version, our next major release after the 4.5. We've already been working on a lot of that technology. A lot of that technology we just pulled out of the 4.5 because it wasn't complete. So we've been spending about the past year, year and a half, working on some of the 5.0 features, the post 4.5 versions. So there's going to be some really powerful and neat stuff in this post 4.5 version. But unfortunately, that's all I can say at this point.
So I understand.
We're always looking at the next version and working on that.
Because that would be a major change of philosophy for you guys to implement such a feature.
Well, we, regardless of what we do, we would never, ever abandon the approach that we've taken to date because we feel that there is always room for the approach that we've taken. It's not one or the other, I don't think. I mean, you need to keep what we've got in there, absolutely. So we would never abandon what we have done to date.
Hi, I'm Carlos, here with you for an overview of what's new in WindowEyes 4.5. GW Micro, the makers of WindowEyes, has added several new features and enhancements to this latest version. Therefore, we've decided to bring you three segments. In our first segment, we'll talk about general features and enhancements made to WindowEyes. In our second segment, we'll discuss WindowEyes and its enhancements in Internet Explorer. And in our third and final segment, we'll talk about using WindowEyes in a remote desktop environment. But first of all, what exactly is WindowEyes? WindowEyes is a screen access program designed to give blind and visually impaired computer users access through speech or braille to the Microsoft Windows operating systems. This includes Windows 95, Windows 98, Windows Millennium, Windows 2000, Windows XP, both home and professional, and Windows 2003. So let's get started in our overview of the general features and enhancements made to WindowEyes. WindowEyes now offers greater support for MSN Messenger, Microsoft's instant messaging program. An instant messaging program allows you to send text messages in real time to another person. This differs from email because messages are sent instantly and the person on the other end receives them instantly. However, with email, the person receiving the message may not receive the message until they check their email, which could be the next day or even the next week. So instant messaging programs provide a way to communicate with others instantaneously. WindowEyes has in the past only been able to read the first incoming message of a conversation. Additional text would have to be read manually with either a hotkey or navigation keys. However, now with WindowEyes 4.5 and the latest version of MSN Messenger, version 6, each incoming message is read automatically. I'm now in MSN Messenger, sitting at the top of my contact list. I'm going to have a quick chat with Trouble, so being that I'm in a list, I can press the first letter of his name, T, but I know that he's going to be the second T in my list here.
T, Trouble 25 of 26.
And we'll press Enter.
Trouble conversation. Messages that have been sent and received.
And
edit
we'll
box
start
input.
Typing a simple message.
H-E-L-L-O space.
Hello, Trouble.
T-R-O-U-L-E period space.
This is Carlos.
T-A-I-S-I-S space. C-R-L-O-S space.
Recording.
R E C O R D F E space
a segment
A space S E G E F E space
for
F O R space
ACB radios
A C B space R I O S S space
main menu
M A I N space M E N U period
and we'll press enter to send him this message.
Carlos and Derek says hello Trouble. This is Carlos recording a segment for ACB radios main menu.
Now you hear my name mentioned as Carlos and Derek. Derek is actually my German
Trouble
Shepherd.
Says, hello, Carlos.
He's my German Shepherd, so I just add his name in with mine. And as you heard, WindowEyes automatically read my incoming message of Trouble saying hello to us. We'll go ahead and type him another message.
H-O-W space.
How have you been?
A-A-V-E space W space B-E-E-N question.
And we'll press enter to send this message.
Carlos and Derek says, how have you been? Trouble says, not too bad, a little cool around here.
And again, you heard WindowEyes automatically read our incoming message without us having to review our chat window or press any hotkeys to have the message read to us. We can also hear incoming messages even if we're not in our chat window. Let's go ahead and reply to his message and say, "Have you been keeping warm in this cool weather?"
HAVE:WARM.
We'll say cold weather because it has been kind of cold around here.
COLD:WEATER. Question. Carlos and Derek says, "Have you been keeping warm in this cold weather?"
And now we'll alt-tab to our main MSN Messenger contact list.
MSN Messenger, list view, trouble 25 of 26.
And now we'll wait for his reply.
Trouble conversation wants attention. Trouble says, "Oh, yes, got the sweatgear on."
And there we heard Trouble's reply, even though we're not in the message window. This means you can surf the web in Internet Explorer, or you could type a letter in Microsoft Word and still hear incoming messages. You'll have to then alt-tab back into the message window before you can actually reply, but you don't have to be in the message window to hear incoming messages. We'll go ahead and alt-tab back to our message window and thank Trouble for having a conversation with us.
Trouble conversation.
Just say,
input.
Sounds good.
S-O-U-N-D-S space G-O-O-D period space.
Thanks.
E-A-N-K-S space F-O-R space A-A-V-I-N-G space.
This conversation.
C-O-N-V-E-R-S-A-T-I-N space.
With us.
D-I-T-H space U-S space.
For.
F-O-R space.
Our demonstration for main menu. And we'll press enter.
Carlos and Derek says, "Sounds good. Thanks for having this conversation with us for our demonstration for main menu."
And we'll wait for his reply.
Trouble says, "No problem, Carlos."
This enhancement makes chatting with WindowEyes and MSN Messenger much easier and much more enjoyable. Keep in mind, this is only available with the 4.5 release of WindowEyes and MSN Messenger version 6. WindowEyes 4.5 with any earlier versions of MSN Messenger or earlier versions of WindowEyes with MSN Messenger will not provide this feature. WindowEyes also offers greater support for the latest version of Adobe Acrobat Reader, version 6. Adobe Acrobat Reader is a program required to view PDF documents. A PDF, or Portable Document Format file, is a file which allows one to distribute content in a secure way. The content of a PDF document cannot be manipulated, and the author has the option of setting security levels such that the document may not be printed or maybe even saved to your hard drive. In the past, some PDF documents were not accessible because the security settings were set so high that even screen access programs such as WindowEyes could not access the content of the file. Through the work of GW Micro and Adobe, WindowEyes 4.5 and Acrobat Reader version 6 now allows greater access to secure PDF documents. Keep in mind that a PDF document which contains a scanned image as its content will still not be accessible through a screen access program such as WindowEyes. In that case, you'll need to use an optical character recognition program such as OpenBook or Kurzweil to recognize the content of the file. I'm not able to demonstrate the way that WindowEyes provides access to a secure PDF file. That is actually going to be transparent. Once you open a secure PDF document, you'll just be placed into the content of the file. So that's really going to be transparent. But what I can demonstrate is how WindowEyes 4.5 now allows access to a PDF file's bookmarks. I'm now in Adobe Acrobat Reader version 6 with the WindowEyes 4.5 manual loaded. And this manual is loaded into Pages. There is a setting in Adobe Acrobat Reader which will allow you to load the full document if that's what you want to do. But for this demonstration, we'll just leave it at its default setting, which will load the PDF into the program as Pages. Let's read just this first page of the WindowEyes manual.
WindowEyes version 4.5 screen access software for Windows 95, 98, 2000 XP 2003 bottom.
And that's our first page. We can hold Control and press the page down key to access the next page.
Single page. Loading page. Load done single page. GW Micro Inc. 725 Airport North Office Park, Fort Wayne, and 46,825 phone 26.
Okay, so we'll silence our speech there. You can tell that if we want to look for a specific section of this manual, it's going to take some time to actually find it. However, we can press F6 to access the list of bookmarks.
Three view options, unknown.
And then we can just arrow down.
Three view, contact information, step one.
And we have contact information.
Three view, warranty.
Where warranty.
Three view, table of contents.
Table of contents.
Three view, one introducing window eyes.
This is chapter one. Let's say we want to jump directly to chapter three.
Three view, two installing window eyes.
Arrow down one more time.
Three view, three speaking of windows.
And press enter.
Single page. Custom control loading page. Load done single page. Single page. Loading page. Load done single page. Speaking of Windows 3.1 section 3. Speaking of Windows, this section of the Window Eyes manual provides you with some basic information about how the Windows operating system works.
Okay, and as you can tell, we have jumped directly to chapter 3. Let's say we want to skip down to chapter 10. We'll just press F6 again.
Preview. 3. Speaking of Windows. Step 1.
And arrow down.
Preview. 4. An overview of Window Eyes.
There's chapter 4.
Preview. 5. Globally
speak.
Chapter 5. Preview. 6. Setting up the
chapter
voices.
Chapter 6.
Preview. 7. Speech environments.
Chapter 7.
Preview. 8. Introducing Window Eyes. Preview. 9. Reading with. Preview. 10. Reading the screen with the mouse.
And now we're at chapter 10. We'll just press enter.
Custom control. Single page. Loading page. Load done single page. Reading the screen with the mouse. 101 section 10. Reading the screen with the mouse. This section of the Window Eyes manual provides information on reviewing the screen with the Window Eyes mouse keys.
Okay, and now we're at chapter 10. So by having access to the bookmarks in a PDF document, you can quickly jump from section to section or chapter by chapter, depending on how the author of the PDF document has designed the file. Window Eyes now contains an error reporting utility. Other programs, such as Microsoft Windows and Microsoft Office, contain error reporting utilities, which means that if you encounter a crash, the program, upon the next time it launches, can allow you to send information pertaining to the crash to the company so that future versions can be enhanced and made more stable. WindowEyes has this type of a feature now. There's two ways to access the error reporting utility. One, by going through the WindowEyes control panel. We'll hit control backslash.
WindowEyes active WindowEyes point zero zero zero.
And we'll silence our speech here. We'll press Alt H to access the help menu.
H, W, WindowEyes manual.
And we'll arrow down.
R window eyes read me. E error reporting dialog.
And error reporting is the third item in this menu. Another way that you can access error reporting is simply by launching Window Eyes. So if Window Eyes should encounter a problem and creates an error to be sent to GW Micro, upon the next launch of Window Eyes, you'll be presented with a dialog asking you what you would like to do with the error report. Now I have created a false error report to send just for demonstration purposes so you can see how this works. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to close Window Eyes here in the Window Eyes control panel. We'll just press Alt F4
button, okay, dialogue,
and press
Eyes,
enter. And now I'll press Control Alt W, which is the default shortcut for launching Window Eyes.
Window Eyes 4.5 checkbox. Uncheck D, do not ask me again on startup dialog error reporting.
And now we're brought into a dialog letting us know that there's an error report to be sent. I'll press Ctrl-Shift-W to read this dialog.
Error reporting, you are about to send technical information to GW Micro regarding a recent error. Sending this information will allow our developers to further enhance the stability of Window Eyes. Only technical information regarding the crash will be submitted. No personal information will be transferred. You must be connected to the internet before you can continue. Although some virus scanning programs may caution you regarding the execution of this error reporting tool, GW Micro guarantees that this transaction is 100% virus-free. If you have concerns, please contact our technical support department at 260-489-3671. Do you wish to send this information to GW Micro? Checkbox D, do not ask me again on startup. Uncheck default button, Y, yes button, and no optional comments.
So the dialog lets us know that the error report is virus-free and gives us choices of what to do with the report. Let's use our tab key to navigate around the dialog.
Button Y, yes.
Here's a yes button. We can press enter there to send the report to GW Micro.
Button and no.
Here's a no button. If we decide to not send the report to GW Micro, we can choose no. However, I highly recommend sending a report because it only helps GW Micro increase the stability of Window Eyes for the future. We'll press tab.
Edit box, optional comments.
And here's an edit box where we can type optional comments, such as an email address or something, because The error report does not contain personal information, so just by sending an error report, GW Micro does not know what kind of system you have, what you were doing at the time of the crash, or any contact information. So just for demonstration purposes, I'll just type, this is only a test. And we'll press tab.
Checkbox unchecked. Do not ask me again on startup.
And here's a checkbox, which if we check this box, this dialog will not appear the next time WindowEyes starts, whether it be manual or if we restart our computer. And we'll press tab again.
Button Y, yes.
And we're back to our yes button, where I'll press enter.
WindowEyes error reporting. WindowEyes error reporting. WindowEyes error reporting.
And now we're brought into another window where we can actually press our tab key.
Edit box. This is only a test. This is a test of the WindowEyes error reporting utility for ACB Radio S main menu show. End.
We're in an edit box, which allows us to see exactly what information has been sent to GW Micro. And since I created this, I knew exactly what was in it. But if I didn't know, I could review the information in this box and find out exactly what information has been sent to GW Micro. Let's press tab again.
Link support gwmicro.com.
There's a link. If we press enter, our default email application will launch and open a message addressed to the support at gwmicro.com email address. And we can press tab again.
Button. Close window.
And we have a close window button, where I'll press enter.
Desktop. List view. Microsoft Outlook 6 of 16.
After our error has been sent, the error no longer exists on our system. If we go to the WindowEyes control panel with control backslash,
WindowEyes active force,
and silence that and press Alt H.
H. W. WindowEyes manual.
And arrow down to the error reporting feature.
R. WindowEyes readme. E. Error reporting. Dialog.
We'll press enter here.
Menu closed. Dialog. Error reporting. There are no errors to report. Default button OK. Button OK.
And we can simply press OK to get rid of this dialog.
WindowEyes active force.
Back to our WindowEyes control panel. But once you've sent an error report, the error report is erased from your system, allowing room for another report if one needs to be made. And there you have it, the WindowEyes error reporting utility. Like I said, WindowEyes 4.5 is very, very stable. I've actually been able to run my Windows XP system here for multiple days without restarting, and even then, if I restart, it's not been due to a WindowEyes crash. But if you encounter such a crash and WindowEyes generates a report to send to GW Micro, I highly recommend allowing that report to be sent, because that only helps GW Micro increase the stability of WindowEyes for a future release. Another enhancement made to WindowEyes is how we access the hotkeys dialog. Let's first press control backslash to access the WindowEyes control panel.
WindowEyes active port 6R.0.
I'll silence that with the control key and press the Alt key.
File pull down.
Now we're on the menu bar of the control panel. Let's just arrow to the right.
Screen pull down.
We have our screen menu.
Keyboard pull down.
Keyboard menu.
Mouse pull down.
Our mouse menu.
Hotkeys pull down.
And a hotkeys menu, if you have used prior versions of WindowEyes, you'll know immediately that that is something new. It used to be a hotkeys dialog, but now we have a hotkeys menu. Let's press the down arrow to see what's exactly in this menu.
Cursor dialog.
We have a cursor dialog for hotkeys pertaining to cursoring.
Mouse dialog.
We have all the mouse hotkeys grouped into one dialog now.
MSAA dialog.
And something that's been asked for, an MSAA hotkeys dialog, where you can change all the keystrokes associated in MSAA.
Miscellaneous dialog.
We have a miscellaneous hotkeys dialog. Just keep pressing the down arrow here.
User windows dialog.
We have user windows dialog, all the hotkeys pertaining to user windows.
Cursor dialog.
And we're back to the cursor dialog. Let's go ahead and press enter here on cursor.
Menu closed. Menu closed. List box K keys. Character prior colon. Undefined 1 of 22 dialog cursor hotkey definitions.
So now we're in the cursoring hotkeys dialog. Another thing that has been changed is how these hotkeys are listed. Let's, for example, press the letter W.
W, word prior colon, undefined 4 of 22.
We have word prior. In previous versions of WindowEyes, it was listed as prior word. So if you wanted to get to prior word from the top of the list, you would have to press P to get first past prior character, then maybe prior sentence, prior line, prior word, things of that nature. Instead of P for prior and N for next, which there are several of, you can just press the first letter of what you'd like. So W for word. If we want paragraph, we can just press P.
P, paragraph, prior, colon, undefined, 13 of 22.
And we're in our little listing here for paragraphs. We can arrow down through current paragraph.
Paragraph, colon, control, dash, number, dash, up arrow, 14 of 22.
And the next paragraph.
Paragraph, next, colon, undefined, 15 of 22.
It makes it much easier to locate items in the list of hotkeys. Another change that was made is, let's say, for example, we made a change to a hotkey here in the cursoring hotkeys, but now we want to go look at something or change something in the mouse hotkeys dialog. We don't have to leave this dialog, which is actually really nice. All we have to do is press Shift Tab.
Radio button, check our cursor 1 to 5.
And we're on a radio button, which contains all the different categories of hotkeys. So let's arrow down.
Radio button, check down mouse 2 of 5.
Now we're on mouse, let's just keep going.
Radio button, check down MSAA 3 of 5.
MSAA.
Radio button, check down miscellaneous 4 of 5.
There's the miscellaneous hotkeys.
Radio button, check new user windows 5 of 5.
User windows.
Radio button, check our cursor 1 of 5.
Back to cursor.
Radio button, check down mouse 2 of 5.
And now we're at mouse, so all we have to do now is tab.
List box K keys, character prior colon, number dash left arrow 1 of 65.
And now we have all the hotkeys associated with the mouse. So we can make all our changes, and it doesn't have to be in one certain category of hotkeys. We can make changes to the mouse hotkeys and then go change something in the MSAA hotkeys, and then tab to OK and have everything changed all at one time. There's no huge long list of hotkeys to navigate through, and once you make a change to something, you don't have to go back through the menus and access another similar item pertaining to hotkeys. And those are changes made to how WindowEyes presents hotkeys. WindowEyes now gives you greater control of how shortcuts are announced. Shortcuts are things such as F for the file menu or E for edit. I'm sitting in Notepad, and for demonstration purposes, I'll just press the Alt key. I haven't changed any settings yet. These are still the default settings. We'll press the Alt key.
F file pull down.
And we have F file pull down. If I arrow to the right,
E-edit pull down.
We have E-edit pull down. Now, if you're familiar with prior versions of WindowEyes, you'll notice a slight difference, and that is the elimination of the announcement of equals. So we're not getting F equals file or E equals edit. We just hear F file E edit. So the letters that we hear are the shortcuts. Now let's press Alt to leave the menu bar here.
Menu closed. Edit box blank.
And now we'll press Control Backslash to enter the WindowEyes control panel so we can review how we can change the announcement of shortcuts. We'll press Control Backslash.
WindowEyes active notepad 0.00.
Silence our speech here. We'll change the global verbosity settings, so we'll press Alt-L to access the global menu.
L, G, global settings, voice and verbosity.
And we'll just press V for verbosity.
V, M menu, dialog.
Now we're in the verbosity menu. The first item in this menu is menu. So we'll press Enter to access the menu verbosity settings.
Menu closed, checkbox, unchecked, O menu, open dialog, menu verbosity settings.
Okay, let's press Tab.
Checkbox checked. See menu closed.
That's been there for quite a while.
Checkbox checked. P option.
These are options that have been in previous versions.
Radio button checked. Include shortcut before option 2 or 3.
Now here's the new item in this dialog. A radio button which allows us to select the various ways that shortcuts can be announced. The default is announce shortcut before option. Let's arrow down.
Bottom radio button checked. Include shortcut after option 3 or 3.
We have include shortcut after option. Let's arrow down again.
Top radio button checked. Don't include shortcut 1 of 3.
Don't include shortcut.
Radio button checked. Include shortcut before option 2 of 3.
And we're back to include shortcut before option. So we have three choices, before, after, or not at all. Let's choose after.
Bottom radio button checked. Include shortcut after option 3 of 3.
I just press the down arrow key. Now we'll press enter.
WindowEyes active notepad.
And we'll press escape to leave the WindowEyes control panel.
Untitled notepad. Edit box blank.
We're now back in Notepad, where I'll press the Alt key.
File F pull down.
And now we hear File F pull down. Let's arrow to the right.
Edit E pull down.
And now we have Edit E pull down. Let's leave the menus.
Menu closed.
With the
edit
Alt
box
key.
Blank.
and go back to the Windowize control panel with control backslash.
Windowize active notepad point 000 is.
We'll silence that and go back to the global menu with Alt L.
L. Global settings voice and verbosity G.
Followed by V for verbosity.
V. Menu M dialog.
And press enter again on menu.
Menu closed. Checkbox. Uncheck O menu.
Now we'll silence that and tab to our radio button.
Checkbox. Checkbox. Check. Bottom radio button checked. Include shortcut after option 3 of 3.
And we'll just look at.
Top radio button checked. Don't include shortcut 1 of 3.
Don't include shortcut. I simply pressed the down arrow key to access this option and press enter.
Windowize active notepad.
And we'll press escape.
Untitled notepad. Edit box blank.
And we'll press alt again.
File pull down.
And now we have the elimination of the shortcut announcement. In prior versions, there was just a checkbox which allowed the shortcut to be announced, or if it were unchecked, the shortcut would not be announced. So now we have three ways: before, after, and not at all. The same applies to dialog boxes. We'll just type a little word here. We'll just type the word today.
T-O-D-A-Y.
This way, we'll be presented with a dialog asking us if we want to save our options or not. So now I'll press Alt-F4.
Button YS dialog notepad graphic the text in the untitled file has changed. Blank, do you want to save the changes? Default button YS button and no button cancel.
Okay, so let's just press our tab key.
Button and no.
We have button in no.
Button cancel.
Cancel, which doesn't have a key. We can just press escape, but we'll press tab again.
Button YS.
And button YS. Those are the three buttons. Let's go to the Windowize control panel from here with control backslash followed by Alt L.
Windowize. L. Global settings, voice and verbosity.
And the letter V.
V. Menu. Dialog.
And in this case, we're going to arrow down to miscellaneous.
Mouse. Dialog. Activated. Dialog. Miscellaneous. Dialog.
And press enter.
Menu closed. Radio button checked. Include shortcut before option 2 of 3. Dialog. Miscellaneous. Verbosity settings.
And we have a radio button, exactly like the radio button in the menu verbosity settings. However, this is in the miscellaneous verbosity settings. Let's arrow down.
Bottom radio button checked. A include shortcut after option 3 of 3.
Include shortcut after option. Arrow down again.
Top radio button checked. D don't include shortcut 1 of 3.
We're at don't include shortcut.
Radio button checked. D include shortcut before option 2 of 3.
And back to include shortcut before option. Let's arrow down one more time.
Bottom radio button checked. A include shortcut after option 3 of 3.
And press enter followed by escape.
Windowize button. Yes, Y dialog notepad graphic the text in the untitled file has changed. Blank, do you want to save the changes? Default button, yes, Y button, no, N button, cancel.
And as you can tell, we hear things like yes, Y.
Yes, Y.
And if we press tab.
Button, no, N.
No, N. So we can have the shortcuts announced after the option that we're on. And then, again, we have the option of having no shortcuts announced at all. Press control backslash.
Windowize active notepad.
Alt L.
L. Global settings voice and
followed
velocity.
By V.
V. Menu. Dialog.
And arrow down to miscellaneous.
Mouse. Active. Miscellaneous. Dialog.
We'll press enter.
Menu closed. Bottom radio button checked. Include shortcut after option A3 of 3. Dialog.
And
miscellaneous.
Verbosity. We'll silence that with control. And arrow down.
Top radio button. Check. Don't include shortcut D1 of 3.
Press enter followed by escape.
Button no dialog notepad graphic the text in the untitled file has changed. Blank, do you want to save the changes? Button yes, default button no button cancel.
And as you can tell, we don't hear the Y for yes or in for no announced. We just hear yes or no. We can even tab around.
Button cancel. Button yes. Button no.
And we don't hear those announcements of those shortcut keys. And that's the new way that Windowize gives you control of how you hear shortcuts. GW Micro has also enhanced the Load Before Startup feature in Windowize. Load Before Startup allows Windowize to load early in the boot process of your computer to allow speech during password dialogues. Let's first access the Windowize control panel with control backslash.
Windowize active 4.6R.
I'll silence the speech with the control key, and then we'll press Alt F to enter the file menu.
F. Open pull down.
Let's arrow up because the Load Before Startup option is towards the bottom of this menu.
Exit. Dialog. Startup type before startup.
As you can tell if you have used prior versions of Windowize, this item in the file menu is titled Startup Type as opposed to Load Before Startup. In earlier versions of Windowize, the item was just called Load Before Startup and it was either on or off. If it was on, you would have speech during a password dialogue when you first turn your computer on, And if it was off, you would not have speech during the password dialog, and you would have to start Window Eyes either by placing a shortcut in the startup group, which is located in the programs list in the start menu, or you'd have to load Window Eyes manually with Ctrl-Alt-W, the default hotkey to launch Window Eyes. Now, we have a startup type option here in the file menu. Let's press enter to see what's in this startup type option.
Menu closed, list box, before startup 2 of 4, dialog select startup type.
Let's arrow up to the first option.
Top off, 1 of 4.
The first option is off. This will not allow Window Eyes to load early enough in the start process to give you speech for a password dialog. That's like for if you're logging into a network or something. If we arrow down,
before startup 2 of 4,
we have before startup, which is the old way you just have speech before you log into the computer. That way you could hear the password dialog and anything you need to do in that dialog with speech. Let's press down arrow again.
After startup current user 3 of 4.
After startup current user. This basically places a Window Eyes shortcut in the startup group located in the programs menu of the start menu so that Window Eyes will start for the current user that's logged in right now the next time he or she restarts the computer and logs in. However, this will not provide speech during the password dialog if there is a password dialog that comes up when you first turn on your computer. If we arrow down again,
bottom after startup all users 4 of 4.
We have after startup all users. This will place a shortcut in the startup group for all users or all accounts on the computer, and each user will have Window Eyes speech after he or she logs into the computer, but you will not have speech for the password dialog. Let's go ahead and press escape because we don't want to make any changes, but
Window Eyes active.
We'll silence the speech here. The really neat thing that has been changed to load before startup is that we can specify now who has Window Eyes when they log in and who doesn't. So let's go back to the file menu with Alt-F.
F, open pull down.
And let's just arrow up.
Exit, dialog.
Till we get to multi-user information.
Startup type before startup. Select rail display, select synthesizer, select set file, multi-user information, dialog.
And we'll press enter.
Menu closed. Checkbox checked, allow multi-user support dialog, multi-user information.
I'll silence the speech here. Actually, we didn't need to. We have a checkbox here, which is checked, to allow multi-user support. This in Window Eyes is a really neat feature, and it's actually been around since version 4.2, but it gives you the ability to have each user's version of Window Eyes customized to their liking. For example, I can log in and have my speech at a certain rate, volume, pitch, and tone separate from someone else who may log into the computer who can have all their settings set to how they like them, and they won't affect the settings for my account. Let's go ahead and tab.
Checkbox checked, allow non-operating system users.
We'll tab again.
Multi-selection list box operating system user names. Top administrator 1 of 7, no selected item.
We'll keep tabbing.
Edit box non-operating system user name. List box add update using settings from. Top administrator 1 of 5, no
tab
selected item.
One more time.
Multi-selection list box current Window Eyes user names. Top administrator LBS after logon 1 of 5, no selected item.
And we hear that this is a multi-selection list box. The first item in here is the administrator account. LBS is load before startup, so that means the administrator, whoever logs in with the administrator account, will have load before startup, meaning they'll have Window Eyes after they log in. We'll arrow down.
Carlos LBS after logon 2 of 5, no selected item.
There's Carlos LBS after logoff, and keep in mind it said no selected item. So if you want to select something in this type of a list box, we'll have to press the space bar. I'll go ahead and press the space bar on my name here.
Space. Carlos LBS after logon 2 of 5.
And then we can tab.
Button. Remove selected users.
We can remove the selected user, which we don't want to do.
Button. Update selected users.
We can update the set files from another selected user, which we won't do right now.
Button. Set admin privilege. Button. Clear admin privilege.
We'll keep tabbing.
Button. Enable LBS after logon.
And tab again.
Button. Disable LBS after logon.
And we'll press the space bar.
Space. Multi-selection list box current Window Eyes user names. Carlos 2 of 5.
So now we just have my name. We're placed back in the list box. and we hear the currently selected item, which is my name, and we don't hear LBS after startup. So that means the next time I log onto the computer, I'll have speech during the password dialog, but after I enter my password and the desktop comes up, I will not have speech for WindowEyes. This is especially useful in a setting for where I work, actually, in a computer lab at a university, where some users who come in to use the computers may need WindowEyes, but other users don't. And so we've used this feature in WindowEyes to allow those who need WindowEyes to automatically have WindowEyes speaking after he or she logs into the computer, and not speaking for those who don't need it after they log into the computer. It's a very, very, very useful feature, especially for computers used by multiple people, visually impaired or sighted. Yet another cool feature added in WindowEyes 4.5 is the ability to read list view headers. Let's open my computer. I'll press the Windows key, hold that down, and press the letter E.
My computer, tree view. My computer expanded 8 items, 2 of 4, depth 2.
And I'll actually tab into the list view.
List view, top 3 floppy, A type 3 inch floppy disk, 1 of 8 no selected items.
Now this is the default setting. We hear what the item is with floppy A, and we hear other information pertaining to the floppy A drive. Let's arrow down.
Removable disk B type, removable disk, 2 of 8.
We have removable disk B, and then it said type removable, and then our indexing, which is 3 of 8. Let's arrow down again.
Local disk C type, local disk, total size 76.3 GB, free space 59.6 GB, 3 of 8.
So in this case, you really hear what this list view header information is telling us. It's telling, of course, the name and the size, how much total space and free space we have available on our hard drive. So we're getting very useful information. Let's go ahead and look at where the option is where we can change the settings for this list view header information. We'll press Control backslash to enter the WindowEyes control panel.
WindowEyes active explorer point 002, associated explorer point 002.
And then we'll press Alt L to access the global menu.
L, global settings, voice and verbosity.
And then V for verbosity.
V, menu, dialogue.
And then we'll just arrow down to miscellaneous.
Mouse, activated, miscellaneous, dialogue.
And then we'll press Enter.
Menu closed, dialogue, miscellaneous, verbosity settings. Top radio button check, don't include shortcut 1 of 3.
And we'll tab.
Checkbox check, top bottom index.
Tab again.
Checkbox check, current index. Bottom radio button checked, include list view headers excluding first column 3 of 3.
And we're in a radio button which says the current default setting, include list view headers without the first column name. Let's arrow down.
Top radio button checked, don't include list view headers 1 of 3.
And that is how WindowEyes used to read information before this option was available. Let's arrow down again to see what other option we have available to us.
Radio button checked, include list view headers 2 of 3.
Include list view headers. Let's first look at this option. We'll press Enter to accept this change.
WindowEyes active explorer point 00.
Silence that and press Escape.
My computer, list view, name, local disk C type, local disk, total size 76.3 GB, free space 59.6 GB, 3 of 8.
So the difference here is we hear the first column header, which is name. If we arrow up.
Name, removable disk B type, removable disk 2 of 8.
Arrow up again.
Top, name. 3 floppy A type, 3 inch floppy disk, 1 of 8.
So we hear name. If we, let's just arrow down.
Name removable disk B, name local disk C type, name CD drive E type CD.
Okay, silence our speech. You hear name after each item, which, depending on how you like to hear information, it could slightly slow you down if you're trying to arrow rapidly through a list to find a particular item. But we do have the default setting, which excludes the first column header. If we go back into the WindowEyes control panel with Control backslash,
WindowEyes active explorer point 00,
silence our speech, and press Alt L.
L, global settings, voice and verbosity.
Followed by V for the verbosity menu.
V, menu, dialogue.
And we'll just arrow down to miscellaneous.
Mouse, dialogue, activated, dialogue, miscellaneous, dialogue.
And press Enter.
Menu closed, top radio button checked, don't
silence that. Now we're back into our miscellaneous verbosity settings. We'll just tab back to that radio button that controls our list view header information.
Checkbox check, top bottom index. Checkbox check, current index. Radio button checked, include list view headers 2 of 3.
Now I'll just arrow down.
bottom radio button checked include list view headers excluding first column 3 of 3.
And like I say, that's the default setting. It excludes the first column, so you wouldn't hear name in our example. You'd hear the name local disk C or 3 floppy A, but you wouldn't actually hear name mentioned before the actual name of the item. Let's arrow down again.
Top radio button check don't include list view headers 1 of 3.
Don't include list view headers. We'll press enter.
Window eyes active explorer point.
Followed by escape.
My computer, list view, CD drive, ECD drive, 4 of 8.
Now, like I said, this is the way WindowEyes used to announce list view information. Let's arrow up.
Local disk C, local disk 76.3 GB, 59.6 GB, 3 of 8.
So, as you can tell, the list view header information does give you nice feedback pertaining to what the items actually mean in the list view. So the ability to hear list views, in my opinion, is a really neat feature added to WindowEyes version 4.5. GW Micro has also enhanced the text selection announcement in WindowEyes. In past versions, there have been times when shift and arrow keys in a document would just not announce what's selected, even though visually text was being selected. But GW Micro has reworked the method that WindowEyes uses to report selected text, so it should be much more accurate now. Finally, in WindowEyes 4.5, speech rates are offered depending on how many rates your synthesizer can support. So, for example, the triple talk can support 10 different rates. However, the sappy voices, many of the sappy voices, can support up to 100 different rates. I'm using Eloquence right now, and we can select several different rates just with the shift up and down arrow key. Another change that has been made is instead of selecting all with insert and right arrow, all is the default selection in the insert arrow keys. So instead of the default being adjusting the screen rate and then you'd have to go change the keyboard and mouse rate separately or hit insert right arrow until you get to all voices is the default setting. So once you start WindowEyes and begin making changes to the voice with the insert arrow keys, you'll be manipulating all voices. GW Micro now ships additional speech synthesizers with WindowEyes 4.5. In addition to the Microsoft Voices and Eloquence, which has shipped with previous versions of WindowEyes, we now have the addition of DeckTalk Access 32. Now this version of DeckTalk Access 32 is tied to WindowEyes, therefore you cannot use this DeckTalk with any other screen access program or any other program which can utilize a text-to-speech engine. Let's go ahead and press Control Backslash to access the WindowEyes control panel.
WindowEyes Active Explorer point 00.
We'll silence that. We'll press Alt F.
F. Open pull down.
We're in the File menu, and I can just press the letter Y to access my speech synthesizer selection dialog.
Y. Menu closed. List box synthesizers. Sappy 13 of 19. Dialog synthesizer selection.
Now all we have to do is press the letter D.
D. DeckTalk Access 32 WindowEyes 7 of 19.
And we hear DeckTalk Access 32 WindowEyes. This is the version of DeckTalk Access 32 which is tied specifically to WindowEyes. However, if you already have DeckTalk Access 32 which you've purchased from GW Micro, the next item in the list will arrow down.
DeckTalk Access 32 8 of 19.
It's just a plain old DeckTalk Access 32, and you could still utilize your purchased copy with other programs such as Kurzweil or OpenBook or whatever program can utilize the DeckTalk Access 32. But we'll arrow up.
DeckTalk Access 32 WindowEyes 7 of 19.
This particular version is tied to WindowEyes and comes with your copy of WindowEyes. So we'll press Enter.
WindowEyes Active Explorer point 002 Associated Explorer point 002.
And we now have DeckTalk Access Speech. WindowEyes will also come with the RealSpeak voices. So you'll have the Microsoft voices, Eloquence, DeckTalk, and RealSpeak voices available to you with WindowEyes 4.5. The cost to upgrade to WindowEyes 4.5 if you currently use WindowEyes 4.2 is $100, and that's US dollars. If you're using a version of WindowEyes prior to 4.2, please contact GW Micro or your distributor for pricing information. You can contact GW Micro at support@gwmicro.com, that's support@gwmicro.com, or you can call them at area code 260-489-3671. That's 260-489-3671. One new thing that GW Micro is doing is they're allowing you to download an upgrade once you have placed your order, and once your order has been processed, you will have access to a downloadable version of the upgrade. Now, the version that you can download from the website only comes with DuckTalk Access 32. They have not included the RealSpeak voices in the downloadable version to keep the size of the file to a minimum. Therefore, you'll be able to download your upgrade prior to actually receiving your upgrade in the mail. If you want to use the RealSpeak voices, you'll have to install them from the CD. Well, that's about it for this first segment of an overview of what's new in WindowEyes 4.5. You can probably see now why we've decided to split up this overview into three segments. In our next segment, we'll talk about using WindowEyes and Internet Explorer. They've made a lot of changes there as well. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions pertaining to this overview, please send me an email at carlos@acbradio.org. That's Carlos, C-A-R-L-O-S, @acbradio.org.
Hi, this is Paul Merrill from Main Menu, here to review a couple of products for you. Some things I think you'll find interesting for those of you that use screen magnifiers. There's not going to really be any sort of demonstration, if you will, because it's difficult to demonstrate a visual program to an audio-only audience. So, as you can see, it'd be kind of a problem there. But in any event, I had a chance to try three screen magnification programs with some limited speech reading, and I can give you some pretty clear and concise results as to what I found. So far, and by the way, you can get trial versions of all these for yourselves, and you need to keep in mind that when you are using these programs, your video card needs to be able to handle the application at which you're going to be dealing with. Each video card has a little bit of a different characteristic, so you're going to find you're going to want to pay close attention to the specifications in the screen magnifier of choice. The three programs I will talk about are ZoomText Extra Level 8.0. I have the screen reader and magnifier. They've done rather well. Also, I will talk a little bit about Magic Screen Magnifier. That had no speech at all, but I went ahead and purchased it. And believe it or not, I returned it to Freedom Scientific. I was very dissatisfied with the program, and I'll go more into that in a second. Also had very limited experience with Dolphin. However, I found when I went to the webpage to try to retrieve a demo of the program, well, I had to fill a bunch of forms out, you know, basically giving my life away. So I found it to be quite difficult to say, hey, I want to download this program, because you got to give them all sorts of personal information. The Freedom Scientific and the ZoomText at AISquared.com do give instant links. So you just may have to put in an email address, something like that. But you're going to find that your information that you have to give out is going to be very, very limited. So anyhow, let's get right into our program here. First of all, I have to say that I was very displeased at first when ZoomText version 8.0 came out. I found there was a lot of issues with jumping. Lots of interesting things were happening. I wasn't used to the way it's set up. I was a person who upgraded from version 7.11. I was looking for a solution. And when you're looking for a solution, a lot of times you'll spend that extra cash and you'll find that you'll say, hey, this might work for me, but then you find out very different results. So we went out and got Magic Screen Reader, and so I had a couple of weeks to sort of sit and play with both of them. I, of course, in experimenting, fixed my problem with ZoomText and have found it to be quite reliable now. And, of course, they've just issued an update for ZoomText version 8.0. 3 I applied the update. That seems to have done the trick. So we seem to be doing okay for that. However, I have to say, Magic, in its recent campaign last month, they lowered the price on the program substantially, like cut it in half. And I have to say, I'm not impressed. It's a very bulky program. When you first bring Magic up, you're going to see a splash screen that looks pretty huge. It is a little bit larger than I would expect. It takes a little longer to load, something that I wasn't quite impressed with. Also, when you use Magic Screen Magnifier, you'll notice that when you run it for a while and you start opening and closing windows in Internet Explorer or using various applications, you're going to notice that this cursor is going to get a little bit funny, a little flaky. The only solution you have to that is to restart Magic. You have to close Magic, and you have to restart it. But I haven't had a crash, but it just was just not very reliable as far as I was concerned. You can't run Magic for 10 or 12 hours and run consistent Windows all the time. However, if you are a JAWS for Windows user and you have a little bit of sight and you feel like taking and going with the same company, if you know, you might have different results. The video card might be perfect for Magic, and you might have no problem with sluggishness. But here on the GeForce card that I have, which is like a 32 megabyte card, I don't recall exactly, but with the GeForce card, it's quite interesting. So we had to do a little bit of restarting with Magic. Of course, all these programs use that new DCM chain, the new that new thingy. I don't know exactly how it works or what it does. I just know that I can install the programs together, and of course in my installations, ZoomText was always the first program installed, and then of course I had Magic, and then I had Dolphin. Didn't do very well at all. In fact, I couldn't even get it to go through a complete install. I, in fact, had an error message, which I couldn't read because there was no magnification. So that'll keep you going. So basically, it's really up to you. Pick the program that really suits what you need. Let's see. Just trying to think here. Give you something I can work with. Now, ZoomText, we'll go into that at this point. ZoomText Screen Magnifier has made quite a few strides. In fact, in the older versions of ZoomText, you would find that if you went into the screen reading application, which totally turned off ZoomText and allowed you to listen to what you were, you know, the page you had just highlighted with your cursor, ZoomText would have an illegal operation. You wouldn't be able to use it. It'd be very, very awful type thing to have happen. So you'd wind up with no magnification, and the screen magnifier would have to be restarted. With the new version of ZoomText Level 8, they have incorporated their screen reading capabilities a little bit in there. You'll notice the tabs. When you hit the screen reader button on the top, there's a couple of choices in ZoomText where you can see a screen reader and you have magnifier. You can adjust all those settings independently, and of course you can save them as your default. There's a pull-down menu under File, and you would pull down to Save as Default, and then you just hit Save, and it will save that as your default setting. Of course, you may notice some momentary jerking while it's making the necessary changes to the default configuration file, but you'll also see that you're going to be able to use your ZoomText almost instantaneously. So it's very nice. They've incorporated the reader much better. Sometimes you might find that if you're using a lot of different windows, if you are running applications that are very intense, you might want to turn the tracking off on some of the various features. You can go into Tools, go down to Tracking, and then choose the various items you don't want it to track. I myself turn all the tracking off except for the mouse because I use ZoomText like a CCTV. And so that would probably help out quite a bit if you're getting some jumping. Some of the other things I've noticed, with screen readers, you have to use the Windows Classic theme. It seems to like that a little bit better. If you run the other version with the Windows XP default scheme, you're going to find that it might not be to what you want. Now, of course, on my laptop, I'm getting totally different results. The laptop is kind of nice. ZoomText is the only thing I install on the box. But the laptop, it works beautifully. So if you have a chance to run it on a nice high-speed laptop, you will probably have no problems at all with ZoomText 8.0. But anyway, any other thing I guess I should tell you, make sure your video card is of a decent size. If you have an 8-meg video card, that's probably not going to cut it. If you've got a 32-megabyte video card, and that goes with everything, really. If you're using a screen reader or you're using a screen magnification program, a video card size will make a difference. It'll make the difference whether it talks rapidly or whether it talks very little. So we'd encourage you to check out the websites, www.aisquare.com. Also visit www.freedomscientific.com. Magic, like I said, a close contender. Definitely something to consider. It's really up to you. You've got to decide what you're used to using. And, of course, Dolphin, I probably, unless you have someone that has a copy of it and you want to give it a shot, why not? Prices are comparable across the board. For ZoomText Magnifier, you're going to pay about $300. If you want the speech, you're going to pay about another $100 more. For current prices, go to AISquared.com. For Freedom Scientific, however, you're going to pay a little bit more. You're going to pay close to $700 for speech and magnification, and you're going to pay about $5 for the magnification. I don't really know the whole pricing. For all this stuff, I'd encourage you to visit their websites and find out exactly what they have to offer. So basically, I think that's about as good as I can get with you on magnifications without sort of any sort of demonstrations. I'd encourage, if you're a low-vision person, don't strain your eyes. Get in there and try one of these programs. Most of them offer a 30-day trial. I think ZoomText is probably the most giving. They're givers, if you will. They give you 30 full days to try it. You don't have to send in $19 to Freedom Scientific for that stupid authorization where you, you know, can try it, decide if you like it or whatever. I prefer, personally, my preference is ZoomText. It does not, however, reflect the views of Main Menu, ACB Radio, or any of that kind of stuff. So I've loved being with you. Thank you very much for the time on Main Menu. And we'll hopefully, if you have a question, you can always email me, paul@paulmerrill.net. That's paul@paulmerrill.net.
Today, I will talk about a hard disk MP3 player. The question is, can a hard disk-based MP3 player offer accessibility enough to make it at least halfway usable for a blind person? One can store thousands of MP3 songs on such a hard drive, and so the display is normally essential for navigating. Bang Olufsen, a company which produces hi-fi equipment, once made an MP3 player without a display. The reviewers of this device found this a bit unusual, but since this player was flash-based, they still liked it quite well. With only 20 songs or so on an MP3 player, one can get around without a display quite well. But imagine a company which would develop a hard disk-based MP3 player without a display. I think that nobody in the world would even review such a device. Nevertheless, I decided that a hard disk-based MP3 player could be useful for me, and I haven't regretted this decision. I have a lot of radio plays on my computers, and I always wanted to have a good machine to back them up, and also to listen to those backed-up plays. But for this purpose, a good resume function is essential. Since I knew the iRiva MP3 CD players and their excellent resume function, I was anxiously awaiting the release of the iRiva IHP100 hard disk-based MP3 player. I now own it for a couple of months and I like it quite well. The player came with firmware version 1.0, but soon after I bought it, firmware version 1.1 was released and it offers some great new features. More about that later. One can also use the player as a portable hard drive. No additional transfer software is needed. The IHP100 comes with a software CD, but one only needs the software if one wants to create a database of all the MP3 texts on the hard disk. Since I cannot read these texts anyway, I haven't played around with the software much. The back of the unit has no controls on it. Like the rest of the unit, it has a sturdy feel. On the left side of the unit, we find the record button and the built-in microphone. On the top of the unit are four sockets. Microphone, remote control, line in and line out. The latter two can be used in analog and digital mode. On the right side of the unit are three buttons. Play, pause, stop, and AB repeat. This last button is also important because it is used for a lot of additional functions. When one is in record standby mode, for instance, one can select the input source with the AB repeat button. On the front side of the unit is a five-way multifunction button. One can press this button to the left, to the right, upward, downward, and inward. As you may guess, this button is the most important on the unit, and it is used for lots and lots of functions. On the bottom side of the unit, we find the sockets for USB and the AC adapter. The IHP100 has a built-in lithium-ion polymer battery, what a word, and one can listen up to 16 hours with it. The machine uses a 1.8-inch 10GB Toshiba hard drive, which cannot be exchanged. The IHP100 has the same size as the Apple Macintosh iPod. The device is supplied with a remote control. I like it quite well, but I normally use the player without it. Fortunately, one can execute all of the functions just by using the main unit. I'll now turn on the player. This is done by pressing the play key. I did it. Now it is ready. And to start playback, one presses the play key again.
By now, I would imagine that most Main Menu listeners are familiar with DAISY, the Digital Accessible Information
and you
System.
Can you hear that this
We've talked about this on Main Menu previously and, in fact, demonstrated a number
a
of products
from
which
Main Menu.
The DAISY format. You
one can,
of course,
set the
find
volume
out more about DAISY
by pressing
on the
dock dial upward or downward.
DAISY, that's DAISY, .org. The vision of the DAISY Consortium is that all published information is available to people with print disabilities.
This works quite well. And one does not get beep tones while setting the volume, which I think is good. By the way, one can also set the beep volume, but this is done via the menu system. The play key also pauses playback
in an accessible, feature-rich, navigable format. So in practical terms, what we're talking
I have paused the playback.
About here are the new digital talking books.
So this works well, and you may have heard a little bit of the beginning of the Main Menu review. The iRiver doesn't do that with all MP3 files. It is a special bug with these Main Menu files. Perhaps it only does this with files which have a low bitrate. I have now switched the player off by pressing and holding the stop key, and I will now switch it back on again to show you how the resume feature works. I press the play key. It needs some time to boot. I can hear the motor, and the beep tells us that it is ready. When I now press the play key, you probably will hear a bit of the beginning of the Main Menu review, and then it will resume.
And these are available from a variety of outlets, and you should check with your local library service.
So, it works reliably, but with this little bug about which I talked. One can queue and review with the IHP100, and one actually hears the stuff which one is queuing or reviewing. I press the play key again
to find out where you can obtain Daisy titles.
To fast
now,
forward, one presses the multi-function button to the right.
If we are on Dolphin Goes the Fire, the East Bush Lit Ahead series first product over the last week too.
To rewind, one presses it to the left.
This week from the bottom of Ahead, as loud, lazy sea reader, mangoes, and computer, wearable laptop.
To skip to the next track, one briefly presses the multifunction button to the right. I press the play key.
So what we're talking about here are the new.
And I now press the multifunction button to the right.
Greetings, Main Menu listeners throughout the planet. This is Dean Martineau with a second in our two-part series on toolbars to enhance your web browsing and web surfing experience.
Next track. The motor turns on.
Before I get started today, I think I should introduce myself.
Now I would like to go to the next directory. With most hard disk MP3 players, one would have to go into a navigation mode to do that. One can do that with the iRover IHP100 too. First, I'd press the multifunction button inward to go into navigation mode. Then I would step out of the current directory by pressing this button to the left. I'd go to the next directory by pressing it downward. I'd enter that directory by pressing it to the right. And then I could start playback by pressing the play key. But in my opinion, this is quite cumbersome in a lot of situations where one just wants to go to the next directory. Fortunately, there is a simpler way to do that, which was implemented in firmware version 1.1. Users of iRiver MP3 CD players may know that one can go to the previous or next directory with these players by first briefly and then for a longer time pressing the forward or backward button. This is also possible with the IHP100, but it is off by default. One has to activate it via the menu system. There is a function called Fast Skip in the menu. This is off by default and can be set to off, directory, and plus or minus 10 tracks. So, if one has lots and lots of music files in one directory, one could set it to plus minus 10 mode and then easily could skip 10 tracks ahead. I've set Fast Skip to directory, and therefore I can first briefly press the multi-function button to the right and immediately after that press and hold it, and this will skip to the next directory. I will now go to the next directory. First, I will start playback.
I'm a new reviewer on Main Menu, or I haven't done any.
It's my first directory with radio plays, and since they're all in German, I won't play you much. I will just go to the next directory. I press the multifunction button briefly to the right, and then hold it. It has beeped. Another directory with plays. And I will now go to the next directory.
Through a corner of the window, we saw how the soldiers threatened the students with their weapons and arrested everybody they came upon.
Okay, and here we find the first of the two recordings directories of the IHP100. When one records via the line in, all recordings are stored in the directory /recordings/audio. When one uses the built-in microphone, all recordings are saved in the directory /recordings/voice. So, this is my line-in recordings directory. I have just made some test recordings. I don't use the record feature of the IHP100 very often. So these are just a couple of recordings from the BBC World Service. I connected my hi-fi tuner to the line-in of the IHP-100. Sounds quite good. The problem with the IHP-100 when it comes to recording is that one cannot change the recording level control, and this limits the usefulness of the record feature quite a bit, in my opinion. I'll now go to the next directory, which is the one for voice recordings.
The longest. And
müsste also jetzt aufnehmen und
And that's me, talking German, making some test recordings and touching the built-in microphone. It sounds very good. The IHP-100 has a great built-in microphone. It sometimes switches on the motor while recording, and this can be clearly heard on the recorded material. There are also some size and time limitations for recordings. For instance, one cannot record WAV files larger than 795 megabytes. The IHP-100 will simply stop recording when this size is reached. Also, if one wants to start a new file while recording, one has to press the stop button. The player will then turn on the hard drive motor and store the recorded material. This takes some time, and after that, one can make the next recording. It would be better if one could just press a button to start a new MP3 file while recording. So, let's make a new voice recording. To start, one first has to go into record standby mode. This is done by pressing and holding the record button. If one just presses it briefly in this situation, the next equalizer setting is selected. This is another new feature of firmware version 1.1. With version 1.0, one could only select equalizer settings via the menu system. I am now in record standby mode, and I can hear me through the external speakers which I have connected to the player. By the way, these are excellent speakers. They are from Creative Labs and they are called Travel Sound. And this monitor feature for the built-in microphone is another new thing in firmware version 1.1. One couldn't listen to the output of the built-in microphone via the headphone socket with firmware version 1.0, and even with the new version, this is off by default. One has to switch on the monitoring for the built-in microphone via the menu system. If I'd press the repeat AB button in record standby mode now, I'd switch to the next input source, which is the optical input, and I could then make some excellent digital recordings from a mini disc recorder or a CD player. Unfortunately, one cannot monitor the optical input via the headphone socket. If I then press the repeat AB button again, the analog line in source would be selected, and this can easily be monitored via the headphone out. If I'd press the repeat AB button a third time, it would again select the built-in microphone as the input source. I will now press the record button. I will soon do it. I will first explain another thing. When one presses the record button and in record standby mode, one just briefly presses it to start recording, the IHP-100 does not immediately start. Rather, it switches the hard drive motor on. If it is already on, it will of course not do that. And only while the motor is switched off again, the recording starts. I press the record button. The motor turns on, And now it turns off, and I think that the stuff which I speak now is recorded. I could now pause the recording by pressing the record button again, but I would like to hear it, so I will press the stop button to stop it. And I am still in record standby mode. I can hear myself through the speakers, but even in record standby mode, one can listen to recordings by pressing the play button. I did that.
Now it turns off, and I think that the stuff which I speak now is recorded.
As I said earlier, I don't use the recording feature very often. There are just too many limitations. I talked about switching between the audio input sources while in record standby mode by pressing the repeat AB button, and there are really only the three which I mentioned. The IHP100 has a built-in radio, but one cannot record from it with a player. Nevertheless, I like the radio a lot. By pressing a single button, one can ask it to look for the strongest stations on the FM band and put them onto the 20 station presets. One can then switch easily from preset to preset by pressing the multifunction button to the left or to the right. To switch from MP3 player mode to radio mode, one presses and holds the play key. I do that. Turn that down a little. While listening to the radio, the play key has another function. When pressed briefly, it switches from stereo to mono to stereo. Now I'd like to check in which mode I am. There are two modes, preset mode and scanning mode. And I will press the multifunction button to the right to do that. Okay. It finds the next station very quickly, so I am in preset mode. Let's zap a little bit. A lot of white noise. I will switch to mono. Okay, before I go to the next station, I will switch back to stereo. So, this works quite well. Now I'd like to scan manually. I'd like to scan around the whole FM dial. And to switch from preset mode to manual scanning mode, one just presses the multifunction button inward. And now I will briefly press it to the right. So one can go step by step by briefly pressing it to the right, and one can scan by pressing it longer. Alright, finds a lot of noise. But it really scans. I now hold it for the whole time. I think the machine with which I am recording this review produces some FM noise too, but normally reception of the radio is really quite good. One can do more things with this radio. For instance, one can delete stations from the memory presets manually, but since the automatic station preset mode works so well, and because I think these functions are a bit more complicated to use, I have not looked into this deeply yet. Now, to summarize my findings. The iRiver IHP100 is one of the most exciting new devices this year. In the near future, iRiver will release a 20GB version of the player called the IHP120. It will have the same size and design as the IHP100. The IHP120 will be one of the first digital audio players supporting the Ogg Vorbis format. Ogg Vorbis support will also be available via a firmware upgrade for the IHP100. There are quite a few companies which promise Ogg Vorbis support for their players, but I think iRiver is now really close to a finished firmware version with Ogg Vorbis built in. I'd also like to see some other features on the iRiver hard disk MP3 players. Study mode, for instance, is only available on the MP3 CD players at the moment. There are three things which make the iRiver a great MP3 player. 1. It can remember the exact stop position in a track reliably. 2. Cue and review work great. And 3. One can switch from directory to directory easily without having to use the navigation mode. Every blind user of the IHP100 probably will need some sighted help. Firstly, when one wants to change some settings in the menu system after one has bought the player. For instance, I don't like the auto fade in, which fades in every track when the play key is pressed. This is on by default. Secondly, when one wants to upgrade the firmware, this is done via the menu system. After an upgrade, all custom settings are gone, the defaults are active again. More information can be found via www.iriver.com. One can download the manual for the IHP100 there. They also have the current and previous firmware versions for the device, and iRiver offers some great forums for nearly every device they manufacture. A lot of knowledgeable people are participating.
This is Dave Williams saying a big thanks to all the contributors on Main Menu this week. And don't forget, if you'd like to submit something, drop us a line to mainmenu@acbradio.org.